This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And as Jackson Hayes said recently, I am off to the NBA. Welcome back to another edition of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. This is episode 35 of Drop and Dimes, and the college basketball season is officially over, which means it's time now for NBA draft declarations. It's time now for the coaching carousel to slow down. UCLA finally hired a coach after one of the more abysmal coaching searches ever. And it's also time for coaches to begin thinking about next season, whether that's, you know, finishing off their 2019 class with high school prospects or getting in on the transfer market or graduate transfers or getting ready for the 2020 recruiting cycle with an evaluation period that is set to begin, I believe, in 2 weeks is the first evaluation period that college coaches can get on the road and see some of these 2020 and 2021 and 2022 prospects in person. So basketball, for especially for college coaches, never stops. And the pro basketball, obviously, the playoffs just began. It's going to carry on into the summer as well, and we'll talk about that some to wrap up this podcast. But obviously the big news around the UT campus is Jackson Hayes making his declaration to turn pro and enter the NBA draft. He says he will hire an agent. Now, there is a slight rule change that allows these guys to hire an agent through the process to use for, I mean, just for the process. I guess that's the best way to put it, for lack of a better phrase, just to help guide these guys through the process and helping them determine, you know, how they should approach the draft, whether they should stay in, how they should work out, et cetera. So if I'm a Texas fan, don't get your hopes up about Hayes possibly returning. It was interesting in that I had heard that somebody close to him actually preferred that he stay in college, but ultimately it was always going to be Jackson's decision. And I think that he's had his eyes on the NBA, especially after that injury against Kansas in the Big 12 tournament, which fortunately turned out to be just a very, very deep bruise. It wasn't anything structurally wrong or anything like that. And you know, when he was in New York at the NIT, he didn't have a brace. He was walking around fine. He was goofing around with guys and shooting around and things like that. So it looks like that he's going to be fully healthy soon and fully cleared if he's not right now. So that obviously matters a lot when you get into these, you know, pre-draft workouts and the combine. And it, assuming he's invited, and I'd be stunned if he's not invited to the NBA draft combine. I mean, he's projected to be a lottery pick. So that's good news for him. So, it was his call, and his call is the NBA. And I can't really blame him. You never can blame guys for jumping at the opportunity to turn professional when they're in a good position as it relates to future financial stability, draft status, all those things. You know, I don't know how much Jackson Hayes is able to improve his draft stock if he returned to Texas, if at all. That's not to say he wouldn't have been a better player. That's not to say he wouldn't have benefited and been more pro-ready with more time in college. I believe that if you look at Texas's, this will now be its third straight one-and-done big guy that's going to go in the lot or in the first round. Jared Allen inexplicably. Did he go to the lottery? I'm trying to think where the Nets picked that year. I can't remember where it was. Whatever it was too late. I think it was like 22 or something like that. And he's proving that was an error by a lot of NBA teams. But I think of the three guys, Hayes, Bamba, and Allen, I think Hayes is the least ready, definitely physically. You could see it in times when, you know, especially when Texas played Kansas. That second Kansas game, David McCormack, who's a freshman, a big bruising freshman, but a freshman, just would repeatedly bury Hayes under the rim every single time. I mean, he just moved the dude wherever he wanted to. Just put his back and his ass into him and posted him up. And, you know, Hayes could do nothing about it, despite, you know, having his wingspan and height and all those things. So Physically, he's among those three. He's definitely the least ready in that regard in terms of strength. I will say athletically, he moves uniquely well for a guy of his size, his wingspan, and all those things. In terms of, I saw him do a Euro step when Texas played in Las Vegas, and he did that in front of a bunch of NBA scouts, and I'm sure they're like, whoa, this 6'11", maybe 7-foot guy with a 7'4 wingspan is able to do a Euro step, and it looks pretty fluid. That's kind of freakish. So in terms of athleticism and that part of his physical tool set, he's very uniquely elite in that regard. But in terms of strength and being able to bang around with NBA guys and those things, he's got a long, 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 long way to go. And in terms of just, you know, maturity on the floor as well, you got to remember this is a guy, you know, if you're still playing the drinking game, you can drink up for this. This is a guy that only played 6 minutes a game as a junior in high school, which I feel like you couldn't watch a Texas game without hearing that stat broadcasted. Or, you know, for a while I couldn't go to a Shaka Smart press conference without him bringing it up. But it does speak to just how far he's come in such a quick time. And this is a guy with a fairly limited basketball background as relates to a lot of these guys that are going to be in the NBA draft, and especially against some of these NBA players he's going to be going up against. So in terms of a basketball, maybe mental maturity standpoint, he's got a long ways to go there as well. But I think that one of his best qualities at Texas was he did whatever the team needed him to do. This wasn't a guy that said, hey, I got to shoot threes, or hey, I've got to get this many touches, or hey, I've got to get the ball here, or hey, I've got to do this on defense. It was just basically whatever Texas asked him to do, he did it, and he did it well. You know, pick and roll guy, rolling hard to the rim. You know, oftentimes you don't always get the ball, especially when you're on every scouting report by the midway point in the season because of your ability to catch and dunk or catch and make a move and get to the basket. But he did that hard consistently. You know, running the floor. Big guys running the floor sometimes can be frustrating because they don't always get the ball. But by a big guy aggressively running the floor, it often just opens up so many things for his teammates. So, and Shaka Smart made this point a lot about Hayes, and I think it's true. You could see it in his regular season games. When he'd have a bad game or a bad practice or something like that, he would really bounce back well. And I think that speaks to his mental makeup, you know, how much he's still growing as a player and as a person. But also too that he just wants to get better. Although he's a one and done guy, he's a guy that never expected to be a one and done when he entered college, and he just got so good so quickly that it became a reality that it could happen. But he didn't have that approach of a guy that's been a, you know, 5-star no doubt future one and done guy for, you know, 3-4 years. You know, those types of guys just kind of approach college basketball a little differently than your guy that was a under the radar AAU player that was a late add to Romeo Langford's AAU team on the Adidas circuit. And now the funny thing is all those people were obsessed with Romeo Langford, and rightfully so. He's going to end up being probably a higher pick than Romeo Langford this year. So you just don't know how it works out sometimes. I think that it's I'm not really great at player comparisons for Hayes. I think he's a unique guy. I think he has good free throw touch. I think he's got, you know, a nice little right-handed hook shot. He's got some touch around the rim. He's a great, great, great catcher of the basketball, especially in pick and roll. Especially in post entries and things like that when he's running the floor. Defensively, I think he has the athleticism. He definitely has the length to potentially be able to you know, you see somebody like Clint Capella for the Rockets that's able to switch to guys around the perimeter and hold his own there. I think that that's something he's going to be able to do. And this is where the NBA is moving. The NBA is not a low post basketball game. It's not. It's get up and down. It's, you know, can your bigs switch on to different guys? Can they run the floor? Can they finish at the rim and pick and roll? And, you know, all of these things. It's not a low post Shaquille O'Neal game for bigs anymore. So the game is trending in a way that really helps Jackson Hayes. But In terms of readiness, almost all of these guys that enter the NBA draft are not ready. And they're, you know, a lot of those guys don't begin to play their best basketball until they're in the league for 3, 4, 5 years. That's when you start to see them really figure it out and start to play their best basketball, when they're 23, 24, 25, 26 years old. And for some of those guys, that's on a second contract. The rookie contract's already done by the time they really start to figure out how to make their way in the NBA. So is he ready for the NBA? No, he's not ready. But that doesn't always matter. He's going to get drafted in the lottery. I think all the projections still have him as somewhere between 9 and 12 in the draft. And again, if you're in that position, it's tough to look at that and say, nah, I'm going to pass on that. I'm going to go back to school, knowing that the likelihood of improving the draft stock is probably low to pretty low. Although you might be able to improve as a player and be more physical ready and all those things, the draft stock wouldn't really go up or down. I think that there are more chances for it to go down than up in a case like Hayes. And, you know, it kind of reminds me when Tristan Thompson went pro. In, you know, he was supposed to be a two-year guy. Him and Corey Joseph both. It's, you know, it really probably led to the demise of Rick Barnes at Texas in the tailspin the program went into, because they really thought both those guys were going to be on campus for 2 years. Well, Tristan Thompson had a better year than people expected. It was a really, really weak draft, and especially for bigs. And it was like, well, how can I pass up being a top five pick? You just can't do it. So in the case of Hayes, passing up a lottery pick is tough to do. So what's next for Texas? Well, they're obviously still in on Jaden McDaniels. And I do admire that Texas, every recruiting cycle, finds the 1 5-star prospect that doesn't want to talk about recruiting and doesn't want to think about it until the last minute. I mean, Jared Allen. Mohamed Bamba was much better in terms of communicating with coaches recruiting him than Allen was, and definitely better than McDaniels was. I'm not sure if Jaden McDaniels has seriously thought about recruiting yet, which, I mean, it's April 15th. Like, he's going to have to pick a school at some point. But that's just kind of the way he is. He you know, is a member of the Jared Allen school of recruiting. You know, Allen waited to literally the last minute and then had to move in that weekend after he made his decision to go to Texas and send in his paperwork and all those things. So hopefully Jaden McDaniels doesn't wait that long, but the Longhorns are definitely still in that race. I mean, he announced a top five, which feels like years ago at this point, of Washington, UCLA, San Diego State, Texas, and Kentucky. I think a lot of people are starting to think that Washington might be the odds-on favorite, but I really don't know. I wouldn't be comfortable projecting anybody to be a favorite at this point. I do think it's interesting that Kentucky has loaded up on players similar to his position and style. I mean, they got a 5-star in Keon Brooks. They added a graduate transfer recently from Bucknell, arguably the top graduate transfer on the market. It's never stopped Kentucky before from loading up on a bunch of 5-star players at the same position. I mean, they seemingly do that every year. But for somebody in McDaniel's position that has clear aspirations on the NBA, make no mistake, he views himself as a guy that's going to be in college a short time and then it's on to the NBA. This is not I'm picking a college because I'm going to be here for a long time type situation. He wants to go to the NBA. So from the Kentucky standpoint, perhaps that works against Kentucky because they got all those guys that play similar positions, whereas, you know, Washington, UCLA, San Diego State, where his brother played and just announced that he's going pro, so maybe that hurts San Diego State there. And Texas would have a better chance for him to showcase himself more consistently and more as a go-to guy as it relates to the NBA. So we'll see what happens with Jaden McDaniels. Texas is definitely still in on him. It's, you know, like all the schools recruiting him is waiting for whatever happens. And I don't think you can ever count Shaka Smart out in these situations. I think his recruiting has proved that. He's, you know, getting Courtney Ramey late last year was an enormous win. As it looks right now, that guy looks like the future leader of the program, in a, you know, future potential star in college basketball. And that was a tough recruitment that Texas had to go win. winning the Jared Allen recruitment, winning the Mohamed Bamba recruitment. Andrew Jones was a five-star McDonald's All-American. So Shaka Smart is pretty good in these situations when he really zeroes in on a guy and is super hands-on. And Darren Horn's done a good job with Jaden as well. Really zeroes in on a guy and is very hands-on in recruitment. He can be tough to beat. Texas also brought in a guy recently for an unofficial visit on Thursday, Brendan Wenzel, a sharpshooter from the San Antonio area. That was at one time a UTEP signee. They had some changes to their coaching staff, the assistant coaches and things like that. He asked out of his signature, was granted it. And he's turned into a guy that a lot of high major programs are taking a look at. Texas basically brought him in on an unofficial unofficial visit to get to know him more, to do more background, to get a feel for him, to establish more of a relationship. Not uncommon in these situations where, you know, Texas from a scholarship standpoint doesn't have any open scholarships right now. But as we know with college basketball, there's so much roster turnover every single year and nobody's immune to it. I mean, it can be a five-star guy at Kentucky, like we saw with Quade Green recently, or even at Duke, we saw with Chase Jeter a couple years ago and Derek Thornton. Like, it's nobody's really immune to it. Kansas is going through a bunch of roster turnover right now as well. So there's always that opportunity that there's going to be a spot that opens up later on for whatever reason. It's often, you know, a situation where maybe, you know, a coaching staff tells the guy, hey, minutes are going to be hard to come by here. Are you okay with that? Or maybe, you know, somebody's in a player's ear and say, hey, you're not going to play there. You need to go somewhere where you can play. It's often playing time related. So Texas doesn't have an open scholarship right now, which you're saying, well, what about Jaden McDaniels? Well, they'll find a way for Jaden McDaniels, trust me. But in the case of a guy like Wenzel, Texas doing its background work and establishing a relationship in case something happens to where they're really able to pursue him. He was a guy that kind of a, I don't know if late bloomer is fair, but some of these guys, their senior seasons in high school, they really explode. Zaire Smith was like that, who ended up going to Texas Tech and being a one-and-done player. Wenzel was an all-state guy, 24.1 points per game, shot 41% from beyond the arc. I mean, make no mistake, he's 6'6", and he is a shooter. That's what he does. So I think it's wise of Texas to, if they're going to have an open spot, if you look at a guy that potentially has size and can shoot, I mean, we know Texas can use more of that in the offense. So that's where they are with there. Otherwise, I haven't really seen Texas linked to a lot of graduate transfers or transfers in general. I think that Texas would like to bring back all these guys and, you know, have you know, these guys a year older in the program, have some more experience. You know, if you look at the future roster next year, you know, having a Jericho Sims as a junior, you know, having a Royce Hamm that's older, having a Jace Febres that's older, having a, you know, Matt Coleman that's older, you know, a guy like Gerald Liddell who really showed some nice things at the end of the season, having him have a full year under his belt. So I think that Texas ideally would like to bring all of those guys back and just have a group that's a little bit older but very familiar with each other in terms of how to play and what's expected in those things. So we'll see. You know, it feels like the roster management aspect of college basketball is only just beginning, and it's going to go to, heck, it's probably going to go into June, you know, maybe even July in some of these cases of these transfers. So we really won't know what the future Texas basketball roster is going to look like until those guys have to show up on campus, which I believe is either in late June or July or something like that. So we've got some months before we know officially what the Texas basketball roster is going to look like next season. You're listening to the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We are up to episode 35, and we're going to get into the NBA here because the state of Texas does have two teams in the playoffs, two 1-0 teams in the playoffs, with the, you know, the Rockets taking game one last night against the Utah Jazz, and the Spurs going on the road and taking game one against the Nuggets. I'll start with that series. You know, watching the Nuggets in the regular season, I felt like they were more of a regular season type team than they were a playoff team. And what I mean by that is built better for that style of basketball over 82 games as opposed to the playoff style where it feels like everything gets a little bit more condensed. The game is a little muddier. It's more half-court based. It's not as up and down. Rotations get shorter, you know, things like that. So I just, when I watched Denver, I just kind of felt like, you know, Jokic is such a big part of what they do. And, you know, he had a ton of assists, a ton of rebounds against the Spurs. But I just think when your offense or your team is so big oriented, and he's a unique big, but you know he's still a guy that you can pick on defense if you pull him out around the perimeter. You know, the basketball, especially in the playoffs, is not a low post, you know, big man offense kind of basketball. It's guards, it's shooting, it's you know, can you generate things around the perimeter? Can you stop guys around the perimeter? That sort of thing. And I think that's how San Antonio is built. And I think this is where a guy like DeMar DeRozan with his skill set is such a big asset this time of year because he can go get you a shot in any situation in the playoffs. He can make something out of nothing. When the game's tight late in the game, he can get to the free throw line and knock those down. He can come up to the big shot. And really, I think what NBA fans and definitely Spurs fans have learned a lot about DeMar DeRozan this year is his skill level was really underrated. He can create for teammates. And we know San Antonio always does a good job of surrounding guys with shooters in their system, whether it's big guys, whether it's point guards, whether it's shooting guards, whether it's wings, whatever it is, they often have a lot of shooting presence on the floor. And DeMar DeRozan's been really good at facilitating for teammates as well. So I actually favor the Spurs in this series. It's easy to say that after they win game one on the road. But I think that, you know, we saw that their bench was better than Denver's in game one. But I just, you look at their roster and the way they play, there's more shooting. I think that there's a better late game scoring option in terms of DeRozan. I would take DeRozan late in the game over anybody on the Denver roster. And you, obviously Popovich is terrific as a coach. So I don't know. I just think Denver to me looked more like a regular season team as opposed to a team that could really have a lot of success in the playoffs. Whereas I think San Antonio, with what they do, I mean, they adapt to what they have and the situations and the style of play and all those things so incredibly well. And this is an organization that's used to being in the playoffs and used to winning games in the playoffs. And you can't really say that about the Nuggets. So I think San Antonio, if they get out of this series, is, you know, I wouldn't want to play them. I know the Rocket, me as a Rockets fan, just the idea of playing San Antonio in the first round was just, oh, no thank you. Not only does the Orange Woods message board lose its shit when San Antonio fans and Houston fans going at each other the entire series, it just makes that place a toxic mess as it relates to any NBA discussion. But you don't want a rivalry matchup in the playoffs, and you also, you know, if you can avoid Greg Popovich and all those shooters, I think that that's okay. Take my chances with somebody else. So we'll see what happens in the San Antonio-Denver series, but I like San Antonio's construction as it relates to Denver's construction. I think that San Antonio is better built to win that series and is better built to have playoff success than Denver is. And speaking of playoff success, the Rockets obviously came up one game short for reaching the NBA Finals last season. They blasted Utah last night. They ended up beating them by 32 points. And the scary thing for Utah is I don't think Houston played particularly well in that game, especially in the third quarter. They were kind of sluggish. And Houston's defense is really what won that basketball game, or really what created the big separation in the second half. You know, Utah came out and was getting some things going in the early part of the third quarter, and Houston made an adjustment and really just started shutting down Utah. Really did a good job. You know, Donovan Mitchell has some really impressive flashes. I mean, the guy's crossover is sick. I mean, he almost put Austin Rivers on the floor and was able to generate some tough shots that went in. But I think Houston did a pretty good job defending him. They did a good job not allowing Joe Ingles to get consistently free and knock things down. Really felt like Utah earned everything that they got on offense, and Houston defensively in the second half did a really, really good job. But to me, the most fascinating thing about that game, and based on the reporting and the comments afterwards, Utah is committed to sticking with this for the entire series, is if you watched how Utah defended James Harden, it was like they almost always wanted to just force him right and give up a drive to the paint. I mean, they allowed him to get into the paint by design over and over and over again. And it was like they were trying to funnel him to his right hand into Rudy Gobert in the paint and just collapsed very hard to take away the lobs to Clint Capella, but also invited Harden to take floaters. Now, Harden's floater has improved a lot. There's a really good story from The Athletic that was published probably a couple weeks ago about how Harden's floater has become such a new weapon for him and how the percentage has gone way up and how he worked on it and all those things. It wasn't great last night, and I think he fell in love with it a little too much, which is what Utah was hoping he would do, is, you know, all right, we're going to, you know, force you to take these contested floaters. We're not going to allow you to get to the free throw line. We're going to try to keep you from getting to the rim or getting lobs to Capella. But the weird thing about it was like Utah was allowing the ball to be kicked out to shooters. Their shooters were open all game, whether it was the corner, whether it was the wing. I think that Harden got cooking early on. I think he had 12 points early in the first quarter and just was feeling it. And he just was not going to pass the ball if he had a scoring opportunity. But even then, he had a lot of shooters that were open with the way Utah was defending, and that really didn't change. I mean, P.J. Tucker got going at one point, made some threes. Daniel House made some threes. It was like Utah was like, okay, if you're going to kick the ball out to, you know, P.J. Tucker and Daniel House, we're going to allow those guys to shoot open threes, which, I mean, those guys can knock those shots down. So I don't know. I can't remember the last time I saw a team defend Houston like that, where it was like, okay, Harden, we're gonna let you get into the paint. It was basically like they were saying, the floater is a lower percentage shot than a step back three. that's because they were basically making sure they ran him off the 3-point line and just invited him into the paint and to Gobert to either shoot a floater or kick the ball out to somebody. And it was odd. And they still were able to get Capella a couple lobs, although Utah did a pretty good job of that. I just don't know how that's going to work over a 7-game series when you're basically allowing James Harden every single time to get into the paint without much resistance. I think that in the playoffs, one of the things as a Rockets fan and I fear about them is that Harden and Paul do so much in terms of creating that those guys lose their legs some later in a series or you know, later in the playoffs. I think it's one of the things that negatively impacted Houston against Golden State last season. Although if they can keep having they don't play till Wednesday after playing Sunday, if they keep getting that kind of rest, their legs should be fine. But they didn't really make hard. He took some shots. Gobert got him a few times, both with screens and in terms of, you know, hammering him on floater opportunities. But if they don't make Harden work to get into the paint, that's kind of a breeze for him. He'll get in there and you know, figure out what to do, and it'll take him just a little bit amount of time to adjust and determine whether he's going to, you know, take floaters or he's going to try to be able to force it into Capella or he's going to kick it out to shooters. You're allowing James Harden to be fresher later in the game, I think, then as opposed to really making him grind through, you know, step back threes or things like that. Throughout possessions by aggressively defending him around the perimeter. So we'll see. You know, Quinn Snyder is a much smarter basketball guy than I am. I think he's an underrated coach in the NBA. I think he does a really good job at Utah. But it was weird to watch James Harden basically be invited into the paint every single time. Like, it's not going to bother him to use his right hand and get into the paint. Like, I don't know. Maybe there's something analytically that says if they, you know, Harden gets in the paint with his right hand, the percentages of points per possession or shooting percentages or free throw attempts or all of those things go down. And Harden didn't get to the free throw line much at all last night. I mean, it was deep into the game before he had his first free throw attempt, but he almost had a triple-double, and that's, you know, including the fact that Houston was able to put in some of their bench guys later on because they had blown out the Jazz. So I think that this series is a bad matchup for the Jazz. Especially with what Capella can do, neutralizes Gobert, and the way Houston can defend around the perimeter kind of neutralizes, you know, what a guy like Ingles can do, and then with the defenders they have on Mitchell and things like that, I just think it's a bad matchup for Utah. So The Houston, or excuse me, the Houston teams, the Texas teams in the playoffs, I think are going to get through to the second round, which is where things could get really, really interesting, especially with what's going on so far in the Portland Oklahoma City series, and then obviously the Warriors are going to be waiting for whoever wins the Houston Utah series in the second round, and then obviously they are the team to beat until proven otherwise in the Western Conference and the NBA Finals. With that, let's wrap up episode 35 of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. You can follow me on Twitter at DMcComasOB on Twitter, DMCComasOB on Twitter. Follow me. Send me suggestions, send me comments, anything about any of these Yak podcasts, and make sure that you have our Yak app. We're really excited about that app that launched recently. If you're on the go, or you're like me and you like doing kind of walks or jogs while you listen to podcasts and things like that, the Yak app makes things so incredibly easy and simple. It's a really slick design that'll improve your podcasting experience. And get to theyak.com/Austin and check out all the great content. We've got spring football stuff, we got baseball stuff, but we're really growing our catalog in terms of really unique voices and topics and things that go beyond sports. So I invite you to get to theyak.com and explore all of those things. So until next time, I hope that y'all have a great week. I hope that your team, if it's in the NBA playoffs, is doing well, unless it's a rival of the Rockets or playing the Rockets, which in that case, I hope they lose because, well, that's what being a fan is about. You wish ill on your opponents and your rivals, especially in the playoffs. So with that, let's wrap up this edition of Droppin' Dimes. Enjoy the last of this great weather in the state of Texas before the 100-degree days are coming, because like the Warriors in the playoffs, you know those hot days are inevitable, especially in the state of Texas. With that, take care.